Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lana, and I'm back after a four-month break taking care of our very active baby. Still not getting much sleep, but of course, babies bring so much joy to the house. So for this show, I invited a few gals to talk about nationalism, identitarianism, whatever label you want to use, from a female perspective. Because the press has been saying that women such as myself are supporting a movement that is hostile to our own interests. We'll talk about how they're absolutely wrong, so stick around. All right, I guess I'll skip the long introductions because most people know everyone on the panel, except for Kirsten Lauren. Kirsten Lauren, you're new, so say hello.
Hi. I'm really excited to be here. I love red ice.
Ayla, say hi. Ayla, and then Bree.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back.
And Philosophy Cats.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
There's actually several more, unfortunately, that they couldn't join, but we'll just say hi, you're missed. So I want to do a quick demographic, you know, poll of this roundtable. So say yes if you're in your 20s. In your 30s.
I just aged myself.
In yes. Your 30s. Okay, so we're all in our 30s. It ended up on this panel. Okay, cool. So we're all in our 30s, and then we have a teen in the mix, a 19-year-old. Say hi.
Well, almost. Next month, I'll be 20.
Oh, okay, you'll be 20. Yeah, my mom was actually married at your age and having a child. That's amazing, huh? Different times.
Well, you know, I'm hoping that that might be in the future.
Well, that's great. You know, yeah, if you're lucky enough to meet someone, unfortunately, you know, some of us have been getting married later. I know a lot of girls that are getting married at 28, 29, lots of girls that are engaged right now, but it seems like it takes longer to meet the right guy. Do you guys have any reasons why you think that is?
Few reasons, I would say. I think for one, it has a lot to do with the lack of morality in society these days, because we become an increasingly secular society. So we're not really raised with these moral qualities. And then it also takes an incredible person to go against the current of, you know, this degenerate MSM, you know, this sort of like degenerate culture, or this state that most people live in. And so I think that most people who are younger and married are either one, incredibly rebellious and have that sort of conviction, or they're just, you know, they're not really average anymore. So that's one reason, I would say.
It's also seen as like the not hip thing to do. Have you guys noticed that? Like whenever I see kids getting married early on when I was younger, I would think, why? You got so many things to do out there. You could go and be headliner for a company or something, go out and pursue a career. And I was also told that lie that, don't worry, you can wait. There's plenty of time. Wait till your mid-30s. You don't have to have kids right away. It's not necessary. It was just always put it off. But as I got older, I realized, wow, I actually do have, my fertility does have an expiration date. I need to get moving on things. So I was pretty much told from a young age, just put it off, get a career, make sure you can take care of yourself before you try taking care of anyone else.
I think that one of the reasons I started my Twitter activism and my YouTube was simply because younger girls aren't even being told they have that option. It's not even an option that's on the table. Like when I was growing up, it was kind of like, well, you could get married, but that's like the less desirable option because you should have a career. And now I really honestly run across girls that are from, you know, between 20 and 25 who were raised being told that, you know, getting married, I mean, that wasn't even on the table as an option. That was never presented to them by their parents, by, you know, by their single mother usually, or by the school system, or anything that they could even get married and have a family, let alone young. That wasn't even considered an option.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you can get married, you can have kids, you can do those things if you're lucky enough to meet the right person young, but it doesn't mean you still can't, you can't have an education or you can't have other interests. It's just about prioritizing and planning, I think, for that season of your life, what you need to do, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I have a graduate degree and I was married throughout my entire college experience. So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to pick one or the other either.
Well, there were several other women that couldn't join today who are, they're all engaged, you know, so they're planning on having babies pretty soon. They're in their late 20s. I'm curious to see how a lot of the content creators, the females in our circle, how it's really going to change once they have babies. So any predictions? Bree, how do you think you're going to change once you have a baby?
Well, I could definitely see my output kind of declining a little bit because once I start having children, I do want them to be my entire focus, which I'm sure that will just be the demand of the day because they'll be crying and pooping and screaming. They'll just need a ton of attention. I've got plenty of friends who are mothers who tell me I won't have time to have my own life anymore. I still want to maintain having a certain level of output. Maybe it'll just change to one video a week or just a podcast, be a guest on this other person's podcast or something. I definitely don't want to quit. I just might have to change how I do things in order to maintain a particular kind of schedule where maybe all I can afford to do on a particular day is a blog post. Okay, today I have a whole 10 minutes where I don't have barf on my shirt. I can do a quick little video about this thing going on in the news. So it's really just about managing your time, I think, once you have kids, because they do take up all your time, and I want my children and my family to be my main focus once I get started on that.
Ayla and I are thinking, trust me, when you have that 10 minutes, you're going to be wanting to take a nap.
I don't doubt it.
Like, I thought that too, like in the beginning, like, oh, okay, when the baby's sleeping, I can do this and that and that and that and that. And then I learned real quick, like, no, you can't do that because you're going to collapse and be a zombie like all day. You have to sleep when the baby's sleeping in the beginning, you know? Anyway, there was this Harper's Magazine cover story. Mentioned several of us. It was 8 pages long. My God. I just kind of skimmed through it because I couldn't really take a lot of the emanation about it. But the whole gist of it basically is that women like us, we're supporting a movement that's hostile to our interests, right? That is going to be bad for us in the end, which is laughable to me. So I kind of wanted to discuss this and debunk this idea a little bit. Obviously, this article was picked up by tons of other media outlets who basically they just say the same thing. They just rehash the same thing. It was mostly hostile, kind of bitter leftist female journalists who are running with this. Hey, these women support a movement that's hostile to their interests, which is funny because a year ago they were saying that our movement had no women. But thanks to, you know, all of the women like you, now they're forced to confront the fact that actually there is a lot of women in the nationalist scene, the anti-leftist, anti-globalist scene, and we are fed up and we are showing our faces now. But now they're really kind of trying to come out and say that, oh, actually they're really... they're actually feminists, but they don't realize it. Basically, all the success that we have, the only reason why we're able to be vocal and out there is because of these feminists in the 1900s, because before that, women were oppressed. So what do you guys think of that idea?
The idea that the movement is hostile to women is something that's perpetuated by a fairly vocal minority. Most men in the movement and out of the movement do have a lot of respect for women. They treat women like people, but I think there's always kind of been this fringe element in the movement that's been very hostile to women. However, are they really nationalist? If you hate half your race, how can you say that you're pro-white?
Yeah.
And I've noticed that over the last, say, 3 or 4 years, as our beliefs have started to become kind of more mainstream, these people are sort of falling to the fringe of even our movement. And eventually, I think they're just going to have to go find another soapbox to stand on, because I just don't see them... You're not going to gain any ground as a nationalist by promoting hatred of half your race.
I think that it's really ironic that the author of this piece, one of the first things she does in the first couple of paragraphs of this is dox my full name. When I spoke with her, I was very clear that I didn't want my full name used because the combination is so easy to find me. And the first thing she does, I think it's on the second paragraph down, is use my full name. And then she's going to assert in this article that I need to fear the men in my own movement. when she's the one doxing me to the entire world.
Yeah.
And, you know, having people, you know, are now looking up my house and posting pictures online and my kids can't go outside and play. And then she's going to pretend like I'm the victim of my own people when I'm actually the victim of people like her. And I think one of the most important things to point out from my point of view is, yeah, I've definitely had those kind of MGTOW, the men going their own way sort of people that are on the very fringe of the alt-right. And they've called me names or whatever online. But I have never, ever once had them post my personal information. I've never had them actually come to my house or do anything like that. And the only people within the movement that have posted my personal information without my permission were women. And especially on the leftist side, in our enemy's side, the people that have most viciously attacked me on that side have also, and put my family at the most risk, have also been women.
Yeah, women have been the worst. All the most amount of hate that women like us are getting are from these leftist women. It's outrageous. So obviously, being a feminist is not about being pro-woman. It's about being a globalist, a leftist, and just pushing that filth constantly. And if you don't get in line, well, then we're coming after you. And I had told this woman specifically that the reason why a lot of women were you know, afraid to get involved in this movement is because of the violence, is because of the doxing, is because of what it does to your reputation to come out and do these things. I mean, women like us do get death threats, rape threats. I mean, these are leftist men, leftist women celebrating that. So, I mean, come on, they're not pro-women, and they look at our movement. And it's just funny because they say that our movement is anti-women, but they actually support communism, which is like raped, loss of women. There's been starvation. There's been murder. I mean, that's a whole can of worms there. And then, of course, Islam, where they literally stone women to death and it's legal to rape women and they have to wear burqas. But they never go after those movements, do they? So we should go back a little bit because we have new people coming on all the time. So it's good to always go through the basics and kind of define things. So I want each one of you to just really define what movement is it that you're a part of. What do you call the movements? Bree, we'll start with you.
To me, the movement in general is just what's most in line with reality. It's a movement that's willing to discuss things like demographics and human biodiversity and gender roles and traditionalism. It's everything in the world that has already been deemed sane. Therefore, it's everything that the neocons and the leftists want to destroy, because it's about going after things that are in balance with the world in order to create that chaos, to break down society, to reform a new utopia that they think is going to magically appear after they get rid of all the evil people, the wrongdoers, such as ourselves. So to me, this movement really is just everything that's totally in line with nature, in line with science, in line with reality. And it wants to get rid of these harmful aspects of egalitarianism that lie to women, consistently lie to women and young boys, telling young women, you can put off having children, you can have it all, go ahead, put your child in daycare, go ahead and work till you're 35 and then start looking for a man. By the way, the wicked evil patriarchy must be brought down, even though the patriarchy has provided for women for centuries, and there wouldn't be a roof to collapse if the men didn't build that house for you in the first place. So to me, it's just a movement in general that is most in line with reality and what has worked well to provide and protect women for centuries.
Philosophicat, how do you define this movement you're a part of?
I really struggle to put a label on it, to be honest. First and foremost, I would just say I'm pro-white. So is this good for white people? That's the first question in my mind. Everything else is secondary. I think an existential crisis, that's not really the time to be arguing about economic and social policy that may or may not happen in this ethno state we may or may not ever get. So, like, I don't mind the term identitarian. I suppose that's probably the one that I personally most identify with. But I don't really, I kind of see this as being like, this is just natural for people to have this in-group preference. And it just seems so strange that we have to put this label on it and call it a movement. This is how people have always behaved for thousands of years. And then suddenly we're the weird ones and we're part of this counterculture movement.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
So I don't like the idea of putting a label on it, to be honest.
Yeah, I've become quite anti-labels myself, simply because the media twists, degrades those sorts of labels. But I would call myself a traditionalist, and that to me just means the restoration and preservation of traditional values. And that would include values that I think that both Bree spoke about and also Philosophicat spoke about, as far as being, you know, within harmony of the natural order, you know, backed up by science, what common sense, what we know to be true, and also for people who are white to, you know, being pro-white. Well, obviously everybody to be pro their people, their family.
It's a little bit of a loaded question because I fear me going off on a tangent, specifically because I have not yet defined publicly.
But if you quickly could, you meet a newcomer. What do you say?
Okay. I would say I'm a monarchist. I'm also somebody who, I highly believe in tribalism, like in a layman's term, tribalism.
Okay, so let's move on to the next thing. I mean, as women with our views, what are our interests? We're told that we're supporting movement that's hostile to our interests, but these women don't even really ask what our interests are, or they think that being a housewife is some kind of oppression or something, right? So who wants to start? You know, as a woman, what are your interests in this movement? Philosophy Cat, you want to start with you?
Yeah, sure. I don't see how our interests are that different from the men in our movement. We all want to be happy. We all want to have security from having our homelands invaded. We don't want to pay these high taxes that go to groups that are detrimental to our society. We want self-determination. We want sovereignty. So if you love your nation, then the interests of men and women, I think, are pretty much the same.
It's also in our interest not to face demographic decline, where we have hordes and hordes of migrants coming in. If I see a bunch of migrants coming over our fence, I see a threat. So our best interest is to close the border. Our best interest is to preserve our bloodline and to make sure that our genetics aren't lost to the tides of time. When I look at my ancestors and all they had to go through to get here, because I've done my ancestry back to like the 10th century, I think to myself, I owe it to them to keep my line going. That's in my family's best interest. And that's also going to keep me safe, because it's going to require me to make sacrifices where I don't always put myself first. And I'm going to need to get a loving husband, and I'm going to need to have some babies. And that's what's in my best interest, to protect myself and my future lineage.
Yeah, I think as a mom of six, I mean, my best interests and my thoughts immediately go to my children. And so I need a secure environment for my children. And that means, you know, both I need a house with, you know, heating and electricity, and I need medical, you know, access to medical care for my kids. But then I also need a safe environment, and then I need to be able to send, you know, my kid to be able to walk to the library, something like this, without fear of them being assaulted and attacked, because they have to walk through the quote unquote bad neighborhood, which is usually full of immigrants, and things like that. So, you know, I would want a system that supports, you know, medical advances, technological advances that keep my family secure in that sense. And then a system that would, you know, close the border and make sure that we are physically safe, and as well as economically safe, whatever economic system that is in the time that, you know, the time period we are, that benefits, so that my husband has a job, so that I can raise boys that, you know, have a future to look towards and can, you know, build a career and support their own family and support my grandchildren. You know, these are the systems that are important to me. And the, you know, the alt-right, alternative right, monarchy, you know, neo-reactionary, all of these traditionalist movements we're talking about today, those are the only ones that represent those interests for me.
I agree. And for me, retaining a white majority is my top interest. Otherwise, Western civilization. I think that white men are the protectors and the providers of women. And I think, what would it be like if we as white women were a minority in a civilization that was ruled by Africans or Islamic men? I mean, we can look to their cultures to see how women are actually treated. They're actually true rape cultures there. So number one, that is a big interest. I need a white majority. Also, as you were saying, Ayla, you know, peace, safety, order, first world conditions. We want things to work. And then we can actually have time to, you know, expand our minds and be carefree with our children, when we don't have to worry about violence, and when we can have running water and electricity and first world things. And these are things really that white men and white majority Western civilization provides for us. So that is a huge interest for us. And really, nationalism wants to secure those things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think historically, if we want to know what happens to white or Caucasian women under Islamic rule, I mean, there are plenty of places in the Middle East, Egypt being one of them, Syria being one of them, Turkey being one of them, that used to be white countries or Caucasian countries. And, you know, the Arabs took them over, and there aren't any white women left. You know, they were all subjugated and raped and, you know, assimilated into that population.
That's right. And so really, when we look into it, why I'm saying nationalism is actually good for women, it provides safety, order, peace, I think a sense of community, it values family, there's a desire for, you know, excellence, there's a desire for beauty, some of the best, the finest art, music, fashion has come from more nationalistic countries, there's a mission, there's a purpose, there's the pursuit of truth and a spiritual experience, all these things that I feel nationalism provides, whereas globalism, is nothing. It's McDonald's and Gap and shopping. And also, I want to add communism. Yeah, like I said earlier, it's been disastrous for women if we're going to compare systems. Look at all the women that were raped under communism, also especially throughout Germany, you know, when the commies came and invaded. Starvation, there's been murder. My family lived through it. Not a good system for women, okay? Not a good system. Islam, like we've gone over. So what are some other ways that you ladies think nationalism is good for women and benefits them?
Well, I sort of am inclined to think that when you said the McDonald's of culture, I was thinking like, hey, that sort of makes me think, what do we really need in life? What really provides us with consolation? And that is home. And home is not a physical building. Home is sort of, you know, you're surrounded by your own people. You know, when you mix culture together and you mix it, you know, and you try to say, oh, no, we're all the same. Well, what does that really do? What does equality do to all those cultures? It waters them down. And it makes them compromise. It makes them compromise the uniqueness, even in a European sense.
Yeah, correct. It's very basic, but a lot of people don't get this very basic concept that actually globalism kills diversity. Nationalism is trying to preserve it. It's really quite basic, but we have to repeat this over and over again. So that's another plus to nationalism. So anyone else want to chime in? What are some other ways that nationalism is good for us and women specifically too?
I'd actually agree with that. Nationalism protects the integrity of our race. And we used to have these geographical borders that would have been sufficient to protect us. And we don't have that now. So I think we need to have that mindset that this is what we want to protect. So instead of having, you know, our borders have been destroyed, essentially, we need to kind of have those internal borders in our minds that this is something that's worth saving. And we need to think about this now. It's not just going to happen because we have a geographical barrier between us and them.
Mm-hmm. Nationalism also gives us a sense of defense and situational awareness, where we know what's going on outside our borders were we to actually have well-constructed borders that turn people away. We would know more, at least I would like to think, about what's going on outside those borders because we'd hear maybe more about the crimes and we'd see what's happening to cultures, particularly post-majority white cultures like in South Africa that let their borders be completely disposed of and they sought after equality and now we have these farmers that are being brutally murdered. So if we had those borders, I think we'd be more inclined to see what's happening outside those borders rather than just equivalize it all. And as you so rightly put before, just water down everything and anything. It would give us a sense of pride because we would finally see how good we have it here in the West as opposed to what's happening outside those borders.
It's funny because a lot of these writers, like Sayward, she had said something about, well, what about world redistribution? And I said, well, that's communism, right? World wealth redistribution. And she's all, uh-huh. I was like, she's like literally defending communism right at that point. I'm like, okay, this is just not going to work, you know. But it's funny because even the communism that she's defending, if you go back looking at Russia or China or, you know, North Korea, they're still actually a long time ago. And now they're still very nationalistic. They're almost like ethno-state communists, you know what I mean? What's happening now has never happened before. Well, I guess if it did happen before, in like we can look at terms of like civic nationalism. Did Rome become civic nationalist, or did Greece become that? And what Egypt become that way? And what happened? It all just fell apart, really. Well, how do we see ourselves? You know, just thinking again, this attack on us as women because of our views, which are really quite natural and normal. And as we've said, this is how it's been since forever. Ever, really? How do we see ourselves fitting into our ideal society?
Oh, I've always said that my ideal society would be socially quite a bit like the Amish. It would be very simple, humble families, large family groups, and we would have a cohesive culture that and race, and for the most part, that bound us all together. Something that we were working towards that encompassed not only what our ancestors had fought so hard to give us, but also was something we were passing along to our children. But then also something that, unlike the Amish, it was not pacifist, something that's very militaristic, that is serious about protecting the community from the outside threats of the world, and that had a strong military, some sort of defense, a very strong one that kept up technologically with opposing forces in the world and was very unapologetic about putting the people that live within its population first and protecting them first and foremost, and then aiding other people outside of its borders, you know, if and when possible and when practical. And then as far as my fitting in that society, obviously I would want to be a wife and a mother and eventually a grandmother and play my part as that link in a chain of women that was really holding all of this together from the female side of things. You know, the link from, you know, having been passed down from my mother to me and then passing that down to my daughters and granddaughters and teaching them traditions and values and a love of self as far as loving who they are and how God made them. As well as their ancestors and their future posterity as well.
See, that's beautiful. What's wrong with that? Why do you get attacked for that? I mean, this is insanity, people. Ayla is getting attacked as like a terrorist on Twitter. My God, she's got pictures of baking cookies and this is flagged for fascism, you know? I mean, this is the insanity that we're dealing with here. It's outrageous.
How dare she say we should make more white babies, right?
I know. It's so controversial. I dare to say white people should have children. And I'm basically on like the terror watch list now. It's like,
When whites date other whites, that's evil, right? We need to race mix, right? Otherwise.
Well, that's literally what they're saying, that the family unit, no, this is for reals, folks. A lot of white feminists and Jewish and other anti-white feminists are writing that literally the white family unit is supporting white supremacy. So the white family unit must be destroyed. They're not talking about blacks, they're not talking about Asians, but white families in particular. I mean, this is insanity. This is why we're out here. This is why we're fighting, because this is insanity. And if we don't speak up against this now, it's going to come for your children. And how are you going to feel about that when you say, I didn't do anything? As a woman, I would love to be able to just, you know, do things around the house and feed my other creative interests and spend time with children. But that's not the times that we live in, because now we're all called. Now we're all called to say something against the system and speak out and be loud about it, because it is a system that, you know, this anti-white system that wants to come after our children, that wants to destroy their future.
Yeah, but having white male children, I mean, my first three were white boys, and that was really crucial to me. I think it opened my eyes more so than if my first had been girls, because I watched our world and how they were treating white males and how there was just absolutely literally no place in society for them anymore. And that made me as a mother go, I either have to speak up and recreate, you know, help be part of the movement that recreates a place for my boys, or they're going to end up these lost boys that we see now committing suicide on drugs, you know, in prison, all of these negative things that we see happening to our young men.
That is right.
And we talked earlier about, you know, why we're doing this. And maybe if we have kids, we're going to back off a little bit. But I figure by doing this and by having a teensy bit of activism online, just by showing our faces out there and saying, yes, there are women in this movement, we're putting a footprint out there. So if things really do collapse in the future and the society just completely folds over, there's at least a sign out there that someone out there spoke out against it and tried to put a little bit of sanity back in the world. And that's all that I really want. I just, even if worst case scenario, we were to fail, I want there to be some kind of footprint out there to show people, no, some of us did see what was coming and we did fight for our children.
Yeah, we have to keep it alive, because right now they're literally rewriting history. And that's part of what happens when Islam takes over, but also communism, leftism, all these ideologies that are a threat to us. They literally rewrite our history. We've seen them. They're tearing down our statues. They're pulling down our churches. They're going online and erasing. I know people who were pro-white activists who, you know, a couple decades ago, and they're literally going and taking down their Wikipedia page as these men get into their 80s and 90s and are dying, because they don't want people to know they ever even spoke on these topics. They don't want that information out there. And I think it's up to us to just continue to be speaking out and making sure that that information stays in some form, because they're taking us down as much as they can and just completely erasing it. and rewriting everything that's ever happened.
That's right. It's like you have to keep archives within your family. Like even all your shows, all your stuff you're doing, you have to pass these down generation by generation, have your own history books so they get the true story of what actually happened. You're right, because the censorship is unprecedented. This has never happened ever before. I mean, there hasn't been the internet like this, but our group specifically, every day I hear about people that are censored or kicked off Twitter, and now they're really coming after us in different ways. I mean, they are trying really, really hard to shut us down, ice us out, and just silence our voices completely. How do you ladies think that this is going to shake out?
I think that we're going to have to exile ourselves in a sense. And that doesn't necessarily mean not fighting.
I think we can't really exile and hide, though, because they'll come for you. It's not the world that we live in anymore. You know, you have to really fight in the mainstream. You have to band together. There requires a bit of collectivism here to fight this collective that's anti-white. They will definitely come for you, especially if you're isolated by yourself in this little farm that is like sitting ducks, right. You know?
Well, I meant like more in a sense as learn how to defend your family, for example, learn how to defend your people and intentionally create a environment for your children that transcends your own life that's going to be sustaining. I think that's the most important thing you can
do. Yeah, I think having a foot in both places. You know, you have to raise your kids to know all the dirt that's out there, to be aware of, you know, cultural Marxism, to show it to them and explain it to them when it's there, right? So you can't isolate them. But then also, I think it is good to go back to nature, to have those farms. We have to kind of have a foot in two places, I think, is what it would be ideal. At least that's how I see it. Yep. Now, Bree, Philosophy Cat, I want to get back to you also because you didn't get to answer that. Now, how do you see yourselves fitting into our ideal society? Because I know, Philosophy Cat, you're not really much of a homemaker. So,
You know, look, I don't have anything against doing the cooking thing, but it's, cooking and cleaning just doesn't really excite me that much. I do like children. I have worked with children a lot, but I do find that it's very draining to be around children for me all day. I do need a break. That said, I would like to see a society where women who want to have children and who want to be mothers are supported in doing that, and that they are, you know, they feel like they're making a good contribution to society because they're doing that. But I also want there to be, I guess I'd like for there to be some acceptance as well of, you know, women who are, you know, exceptional and who want to make a significant contribution outside of the home. I don't think that just because there are fewer women at like the genius levels of IQ that they should be excluded just because there's not very many of them. If they wanted to go out there and make some significant contribution, cure some disease or discover some amazing thing, they should be supported and appreciated for their contribution as well. So I don't like this idea of boxing women into one thing or another. Like every woman needs to be a homemaker and a mother, or every woman needs to have a career. Like that's just communism, putting people in a box and being like, this is your role and you just need to fulfill your role. And we'd all be happier if everyone just played their role.
There's always exceptions to the rule, I think.
There's always exceptions. And we're individual people. We are not interchangeable cogs in a machine. We need to appreciate each other as individual people. I love that there are women out there who want to go and be mothers and homemakers. And if that's what makes them happy, then I hope that they do that. And I hope that they feel that the community supports them. Likewise, if there are women who don't want children or who want children but also want to do other things, they should feel part of our community as well.
Of course. And the other thing is, just because we're nationalist women and we think that women are happier maybe having families and children and marriages, I'm not saying you can't hire a nanny or a maid to help you around the house. You know, we're not saying that you have to like be scrubbing pots and pans all day in order to be a nationalist. I mean, this is just a straw man argument, you know. We're not saying being a nationalist woman means cooking and cleaning and changing diapers all day. I mean, there's other things involved, obviously, you know, right?
Absolutely not. And, you know, if you want women to have children, then women need to be happy, because miserable women don't have children. And miserable women who have children thinking it will make them happy don't have more children. So support women to be happy people, and you will see the fertility rate rise.
I think there's always going to be a small section of women who don't have children or who can't have children or they miss the boat. And, you know, that's okay. There's always been that through history. There is a small percentile of that. And of they obviously they're still welcome. They're still welcome with what we're doing here. I think it's awful to just say, oh, because you don't have any children or whatever, you can't be a part of this movement. I disagree with that.
No, we shouldn't tie people's worth as individuals to whether or not they've had X number of children or they have a certain type of career. You're valuable because you're part of our race. You're part of our community. Whatever your unique talents are, wherever your interests lie. And I don't think that it's good for our community to start trying to exclude people or push them into boxes. And as I said, that's communist thinking because you're just treating people like interchangeable cogs, not as individuals.
Anyone want to add anything to that?
Well, I echo that completely. I don't want it to become very authoritarian where women need to have babies or else they're completely valueless. I, in my ideal society, would want to be able to pursue what I want to pursue. And I know that kind of sounds like the feminist thing. The feminists kind of taken that route over.
No, it sounds like a Western civilization, ancient European thing, honestly.
Yeah. It sounds like a Renaissance type of thing to me. Yeah. But mostly we hear the feminists saying that these days. Meanwhile, they're always crapping on women who want to have a traditional life. So to me, in the ideal society, we'd be able to pursue what we want to pursue, but we would hopefully at least be realistic about it and know that our bodies have a biological clock and that the good men kind of get scooped up rather quickly. Same with the women, the good women get scooped up really quick. And I want men to be aware of that as well as women. But in my ideal society, it would be very much like Philosophicat said. We wouldn't be put into boxes. We would just have this civilization where we could pursue what we wanted to pursue, but with realistic goals in mind and not telling women that they can have it all.
And the fact is there is going to be some women who come around who are just simply brilliant and really good at something. And, you know, and they're going to have a talent that's amazing and they should be supported for that talent, you know. And at the same time, I think that some women, if we structure the right kind of society, we would support them as mothers, but then also as geniuses or for whatever talent that they had, you know? So we're not saying you can't have other interests. I mean, look at me. I work with my husband. My husband, he challenges me. He propels me. That's why I laugh all the time when like these articles are like, how long before this movement clips her wings? I'm like, hello, all of us women are out there. We're being supported by men. Duh. You know what I mean?
Most of my followers are men. I look at the demographics of my channel, my analytics, and it's like 90% men. So the women out there saying that we're going to be held back and they don't want women in this movement and it's really sexist. Most of the people who donate to me, most of the people who support me and are firing off in my comment section and telling me to keep going are men. So clearly that's not true.
Yeah.
And like Ayla said, the women who are trying to push me down a lot of the time, well, yeah, they're women. They're women telling me that
it's been the
I'm
worst,
a part of a movement that's sexist and misogynistic and doesn't want me. My analytics tell me otherwise.
I think that in a sense, it's just we're living in a time where we just need to be sort of rebellious. Like the most moral thing to do is to be rebellious. And that means not rebellious in the sort of degenerate sense. That means rebellious in the I'm going to stand up for what's right, no matter who says what. I think we just need to learn how to defend ourselves and learn how to, while we defend ourselves, do what is inherently benevolent. And so maybe that just means don't listen to the media. Maybe that means, you know, and like I said, you know, teaching your kids right. And but that also means supporting friends, supporting women and men who are.
Yeah, well, and that's one thing I would say. I think globalism, you know, excuse my language, but I mean, a lot of lefties are a bunch of catty bitches. Okay. I mean, I'm serious.
Oh, yeah.
They are. But like all the nationalist women I've met have been more warm. They're genuine. They're supportive because they're seeing a bigger goal, you know, because they know it's about your tribe. You know, you love your tribe. You support your tribe. So, I mean, the best girlfriends I have ever had in my life, and I've always had a lot of friends and known a lot of people, has been out of this scene. The most supportive women friends I've ever had have been out of this particular scene, which speaks volumes to me about also the quality of women that are attracted to these things, you know?
Yeah, the women that I've met since being in this movement are a lot stronger than any of the women I had who were liberal friends. And they stick by each other. We're in various chat groups and we're always, every single day, talking to each other about various things going on in everyday life. I think the women who are nationalists have a much stronger sense of protecting one another and being there for one another.
It's true. It's funny because feminists always have to talk about, strengthen women and be strong, be bold, be brave. And it's just like, you know what kind of women talk like that? Weak women. Weak women who have accomplished nothing and have nothing and are miserable. Because if you're actually strong and you're actually confident, you just are. You don't need to sit there and talk about it and tell the world about it and be validated for being so bold and brave and wonderful because you have a vagina. You know, it's just like so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, for one, it's confirmation bias. And then the other thing is that, like, just whenever somebody is saying something, and this is obviously something that I tell people who are in need of consolation for that reason, like somebody offended them or somebody said something that wasn't kind, I think it's like, well, you know, take it with a grain of salt or judge who's saying it. Like, who is it coming from? Are they a reputable person or do they have good character at the end of the day? Do you know them? Would you trust them with your, you know, with your own flesh and blood? It's really, you have to think about all these things.
So my husband just brought to my attention, Melania Trump, I didn't know, but she's being viciously attacked for her, was it Christmas decorations or the way she's decorating the White House? Or, I mean...
We all knew they were going to come after Christmas next. Come on, they came after Thanksgiving, calling it white supremacy and YouTube.
Yeah, but do you see how they attack?
They're knocking over the dinner.
Oh, yeah. But do you see that the way that they attack Melania Trump like crazy, and it's mostly these, you know, lefty bitches? What do you all think about
Imagine
that?
Imagine my shock.
Yeah, I was absolutely shocked at the leftist reaction to the White House Christmas decorations because, you know, they weren't, there was no politicizing of them, aside from the fact that it was, her theme was honoring our traditions, which I thought was a lovely theme for the Christmas decorations, but it wasn't overtly like, you know, trying to shove anything in the lefty's face. Yet they were absolutely outraged about the woman's Christmas decorations. And I think that this shows how unbelievably petty that they are on the left, particularly other women. And I actually, even on my Facebook page, which I don't even have that many followers, I had people on there commenting about how ugly her, you know, her stupid Christmas crap was. And I was just baffled. And to read some of these articles, they actually put words in Melania's mouth. They say, you know, she probably looked at the ballerinas and thought, oh, you've made four mistakes. Like, these aren't even quotes from her, but they're actually writing these quotes saying Melania probably thinks this about this situation. It's so far removed from reality. I don't understand how this is passing any editor's desk. I mean, why are they even printing this? It's disgusting.
Well, it's Vox, so.
Yeah, I got one for
you. But I mean, this is just, it's like leftist projection, though. They're like, oh, she must be thinking this. And it's like, we can all just hear you guys sitting there thinking these nasty, bitchy little thoughts about everybody else. But just because you do that doesn't mean everyone else does.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. I'm getting tired of these lefty women. I'm sorry. And that's another good reason why it's up to us to, like, come out and have some balance here. Because a lot of guys tend to think that that's the only kind of women that are out there now because they're being pushed everywhere. Every TV show, female leads, and they're feminists. Every journalist, everywhere I look now, it's dominated by these leftist females. You know, it's just absurd. And they attack us more like no other. This brings me to my next point, though. Going back to that Harper's article, they were claiming, you know, and we had said this before, it's a matter of time before the men, you know, clip our wings from soaring. They basically claim that it's feminist for women to be vocal, that the only reason why we could be vocal today and speak out is because of a few spinsters and feminists in the 1900s. It's only because of them that we're able to speak out and be vocal, right? So what do you all think about that? Ayla, I'll start with you.
Oh, I was going to say, historically, it's just false. I mean, you know, we had Queen Elizabeth I, Amelia Earhart, Joan of Arc. I mean, there's been lots of strong women. And now women, naturally, in general, most women are not going to take strong leadership roles like being a monarch or being the commander of a military. But there are occasionally those women that do. And historically, there's not really been anything done in Western European culture to stop them. If there's a woman who has a scientific talent or advancement, she's coming up with medical cures or discovering something new about chemistry. By and large, no, there's no men that have, like, you know, systematically tried to keep her down. It's just an absolutely false narrative. We have lots of women to look at through history who've done wonderful things.
And the only reason I've been able to speak up in general is because of the things that men have built for me. Having a nice house and being able to get an education and having a university to go to, having a Logitech webcam and a gaming laptop and a microphone. Those are things that men built for me. So that claim is completely disingenuous when they're saying that these women that caused a stir in the 1920s or something are the only reason I can voice my thoughts and have a platform.
Yeah.
I can do that because of all this technology that men built for me.
Well, also Western civilization, ancient European civilizations and cultures, women have, they were active in the marketplace, they owned businesses, they were philosophers. I mean, this is old, you know, we're not talking about just because the 1920s came and these women are like, women should vote, that now we can have our voice today. Philosopher Cat, what do you want to add to that?
I think it's interesting that the leftists have this conception that women used to just never have a voice. Maybe that we weren't always allowed to vote, but, you know, a lot of men weren't allowed to vote in the past either unless they owned property,
yeah,
or paid taxes in some form. So they're kind of pushing this idea that isn't really very historically accurate. And I think they're kind of just looking at this period of, say, like the 1950s and 60s, where women were kind of being forced back into the home. But if you go back to previous to, say, World War II, all the major women's magazines were constantly running articles promoting the idea of women being heroines and them falling in love and getting married. You know, oh, maybe they did that in the story or maybe they didn't. But it was never like the main point of the story. They were going out and doing amazing things, and they were whole people.
Yeah.
They were well-rounded people. And they're actually just, they're kind of buying into their own lies when they promote this idea. I don't see men in this movement by and large trying to clip our wings. And I think the ones who are trying to do that are the ones that I mentioned previously, this vocal minority that actually doesn't really have women's best interests at heart. They don't really like women. Some of them are very bitter towards women. But I think all of us in this call, at least, probably have men in our life, whether it's fathers, husbands, brothers, friends, boyfriends, whatever, who are supporting us. And I, like Bree, I mean, my analytics also tell me that most of my supporters are men.
Yep. Yeah. The same thing. Yep.
I do think that, and my philosophy is that men and women are nothing without each other. They're contrasts. It's like day and night in a sense, black and white. So I think that it's very strange that gender is so polarized these days. And of course it's, you know, whatever you want to call it, globalist agenda, you know, statism, whatever, all of these terms are valid. It is modernity, unfortunately. And I think this is very unfortunate because men do things women can't and women do things men can't.
That's right. And women like us get that. We want to be work as a team. Mm-hmm. I would summarize our movement isn't just about men or just about women. It's about families. It's about marriages. It's about partnerships, friendships, your extended race or ethnicity is your family. I mean, that's really what it's about. But I wanted to go back to this whole ridiculous thing about, you know, two women weren't allowed to own property. As Ayla said, hello, we've had queens who have waged war and owned lots of land. But I was just talking with Henrik about this earlier, like, what time frame are you talking about? Where? Which class of people? Did you say women couldn't own property? Like, what are you actually talking about? Actually define where you're talking about. Because, like I said earlier, plenty of women did own businesses. They inherited land, right, when their husbands died. I mean, there's a lot of guys that didn't own property, too. But there must have been, and Ayla, you probably know this, but probably selected cases of when, you know, land went to males only. You know, if there was times when land just went to the males and then didn't go to women, I think that they didn't do it. It wasn't an act of like oppressing women or, oh, women are stupid. Like, I think that it was more of some kind of a protective measure in those times. Maybe women didn't want the responsibility or something of tending to certain types of property. Who knows? But this property thing and the right to vote always comes up. And I just saw in an article some purple-haired gay feminist had written about me saying that I basically want to take away women's right to vote and own property. And it's just like such BS. Like, where have I ever said that? You know, and like that's ever going to happen. Like, you have the right to vote, but look at what these leftist women have done with it, you know. And but it is quite funny because you know who got Trump elected? White women. All of a sudden, maybe they don't want women voting, huh? It's funny. Now, what did you all think of the Me Too campaign? All the stuff going on with Harvey Weinstein, all these cases of sexual harassment going on by mostly leftist men. Thoughts on that?
I say let it burn as far as Hollywood. Sorry. No, it's okay.
Brie, go first.
No, maybe it's a little bit dark of me, but I just say let it burn as far as Hollywood, because they are the ones who have been perpetuating all these lies and lying to our children and lied to me growing up, made me think a lot of these falsehoods were truths. And I love seeing some of these people who have been so arrogant and conceited, trying to tell us what's what, trying to tell us we must vote for Hillary, telling us that these flyover states are dumbass states and such. I'm just enjoying it with immense glee.
And it's not just Hollywood. Not just Hollywood, but it's politicians. It's all kinds of people. And the funny thing is, it's like, duh. We're just now realizing that Hollywood and politics is full of like incestuous, you know, disgusting perverts, and that there's sexual harassment. I mean, come on. Seriously.
That's been going on since like Earl Flynn, wasn't he? Nearly convicted of raping minors, and look at Roman Polanski. These people are just disgusting perverts. And I think a lot of people have known that for a while. They just didn't dare want to speak up. And the Me Too hashtag thing going around, and these women coming out saying they were abused or molested or raped or what have you. Honestly, sometimes that makes me angry, because, okay, you're coming out now, 5 years after the fact, and saying maybe you're too scared at the time. But when you do that, you allow your abuser to go out and still continue to be a predator and go after other women. So you trying to protect your own career as a model or what have you, or an actress, created more victims. And yeah, I'm sure that a lot of people who come out with this type of thing do get ostracized. I've heard various cases of, like, I think Elijah Wood tried to come out saying that Hollywood had a huge pedophile problem, and he was blacklisted because of that. But me personally, I would rather be able to put my head on a pillow at night knowing that I spoke up about it, rather than come out in a hashtag saying, yeah, it happened to me too. How cowardly. Why don't you go after the man who abused you and make sure he can't make victims out of more young women out there?
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing. Like, at the end of the day, not saying something that you know, like being complacent towards inherent evil or intrinsic evil, it seems immoral by proxy. Like, I couldn't sleep with myself if I knew, you know, I had a friend who was being, you know, something was bad was happening to her, him or her, whatever. Or, you know, if I knew of something that was bad, like, I'm not the type to compromise for cash, or I'm not the type to, I just wouldn't be able to sleep with myself, and I wouldn't be able to go to bed. I wouldn't be able to relax. I would be in my mind until I was able to tell somebody, because I think that the fact that all these women have been hiding it, and not just women, like everyone's been
now,
hiding it.
Now, do you guys think
years.
That they're all telling the truth? I think it's a mixed bag. I think there are some telling the truth, and I think that there are some that are just kind of capitalizing on it to launch their acting career or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny how it's a lot of these actresses in Hollywood, and there's so many more that don't want to come out and say anything because they have to admit that they, you know, maybe touched that dirty guy's pee-pee to get into that movie, you know? It's just disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, are they proud of it? That's the thing. Like, are you, because it seems like a lot of, maybe they're saying, oh, you know, I'm proud of it. Hey, he did this 20 years ago and I'm going to get him because, you know, it's convenient for me.
Yeah. Philosopher Cat, you had something to add there.
I think the Me Too campaign is really exemplary of the left's elevation of victimhood to a status symbol. What kind of crazy society do we live in where being a victim is a badge of honor?
I know, it's amazing.
Or we're admitting that you knew about this open secret in Hollywood, that this guy was a pervert, and you still willingly went into a hotel room with him, and now you want to play the victim card?
Yeah, I know.
And you can't say anything because you're victim blaming, right? If you speak up against this woman.
Hey, look, there's a difference between blame and responsibility. So I don't victim blame, but you're still responsible if you chose to go in the hotel room.
That is true.
Could have, if you knew about it in advance, if everybody knows about this guy, you're responsible for your own safety. If you chose to do things that put yourself at risk and then something bad happened to you, well, it's not your fault that a guy did something to you that he shouldn't have, but you are responsible for having put yourself in a situation.
I mean, come on. We all know, like, would business meetings happen in hotel rooms in Hollywood, you know, for movie parts? Casting couch much, you know? Yeah.
I think we have to be really careful about what's happening also to men when we've elevated this these sexual assault allegations to a badge of honor for these women. And we know that a lot of women are not honest. And now we're seeing these rapid firings, like Matt Lauer was fired very quickly. Mm-hmm. Garrison Keillor, I read just before we started recording, was fired. And I'm like, oh my gosh, not Prairie Home Companion, like Garrison Keillor, what is happening? But what I want, now, honestly, if they're predators and they really committed some sexual acts, of course I want them fired. But what I'm becoming really concerned with is the speed at which I'm seeing these men taken down. And I think the ball started rolling with Bill O'Reilly, and I'm no fan of his. But I thought that was a little, like, they didn't really have a strong case there. But then all of a sudden he was losing his job. And I'm like, wait a minute, I think we should... The people that are accusing him of this should have some pretty solid proof. All of a sudden, we're seeing all of these guys lose their jobs.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And like Roy Moore, too, it's really convenient. And turns out there's a lot of fishy things going on there with the women's stories. There was some fraudulent signature in the yearbook there. And so it's like, it could be convenient to get certain guys out when they're, you know, right-wingers anyway. But it's true. You're right. A girl could just say, he touched me. There's no trial, there's no investigation, and everyone just takes it for 100% fact.
Yeah, particularly if we make it the cool thing. If it's the cool thing to say, me too, I got, you know, I was touched too, or whatever, then all of a sudden, you know, a guy had asked you out or asked you for your phone number 10 years ago, and now he's going to lose his job. I mean, we have to make it not cool. That's number one.
These accusations make it very dangerous for men to want to approach women anyway. And if you're a man, you don't know if a woman's crazy or not. You don't know if she's going to be the kind of person who's going to accuse you of raping her. So you can understand why some men go the MGTOW way. It's like it's kind of self-preservation in a way. So it is really a shame that this is running so rampant. And I think it's important that, you know, other women kind of speak out against it.
I just want to add real quick, you mentioned MGTOW, and I noticed that the press keeps trying to tie them into our movement or nationalist movement. MGTOW is not a nationalist movement. There are some guys that have come from there that have come to our scene, but it's its own thing because you can't have a future. You can't be pro-white without women. That's absurd. Go on.
Sorry. I think we've kind of lost control of what it means to be alt-right ever since Hillary Clinton kind of made her speech talking about the alt-right. It has sort of become this umbrella term for everyone that the left doesn't like. And that has included MGTOWs. But yeah, we do need to make the distinction that they're not nationalists because they hate women for the most part. So how can you be nationalist if you hate half your
race?
That's
right.
And yeah, some of them do end up coming to nationalism, but I still question whether or not that they are really pro-white, because first and foremost, they do still tend to be MGTOWs. And I think we kind of need to start, we either need to ditch this term alt-right or we need to redefine what it means and take control of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the camp of like, I think it needs to be ditched after Charlottesville 2.0. There's a little messy there, you know, and there's probably some feds and it's just out of control. So that's done, I think. So there's two men in particular that always come up as being proof that our movement is anti-female. The first one is Andrew England. Now, Andrew England is notorious for just writing stuff that's over the top that he knows is going to agitate leftists. He does a lot of parody. He just really just hams it up because he knows he pisses off leftists. He gets a lot of hits. Obviously, look at all the attention that he's gotten. It's kind of also been a steam valve for some of the young kids. He's got a lot of young boys, apparently, like 14 and 15-year-olds that go to his site. It's kind of like a steam valve. You know, it's naughty. So, you know, the press always points to England as being anti-female. And I think that a lot of his sentiments are just, you know, fun and jokes and whatever. But if they are real, he's always shared my stuff. He's never attacked me. He's always shared my content on his website and other females as well. So there's that, I wanted to say. The second one is the press always points to comments online. You don't know who these people are. Anyone can just go comment in some like a chat room or a Facebook post, but these press, they use that as proof that our movement is anti-female. Okay, that could be anyone doing that, for crying out loud. It could be these leftist female journalists, you know? The third thing is, go to my screen, Richard Spencer. He questions whether women should have the right to vote. This always comes up. Now, Richard has been kind to me, supportive, you know, it's like, No problems there. But what do you guys think about this the statement here? When we were just talking, I was saying that I support a household vote. I think that there shouldn't be restrictions. Ayla, also you, tell us what you think about this.
Well, I think that there should be a household vote. I think that it should be somebody who's a net taxpayer. So it can't be anybody who on welfare or somebody who's not paying any taxes. You kind of have to have some skin in the game. My husband and I talk about this a lot. We kind of also favor maybe people that have children, or I mean, I don't want to exclude people who can't have children necessarily, but you have to have some kind of basically some skin in the game as far as where our nation is going. And you have to be self-sustaining and self-supporting within this nation in order to have a vote. But I'm very pro-family vote.
I completely agree. I just think we need to crack down as far as, this is ridiculous that we can have illegals voting. This is getting insane with the amount of illegals who are allowed to vote. And maybe I'm in a class by myself here, but I don't really like the idea of immigrants being able to come here and vote after just a couple of years, because a lot of them are here just for the welfare state or what have you, and they don't, as you said, Ayla, have skin in the game where they care about the longevity of our country. I would completely get behind an idea of maybe one house, one vote. I don't think people who don't pay taxes should be allowed to vote at all, because especially with people on welfare, they have their own interests in keeping that big government going because they want that money. I think if you lobby for anybody who's not the USA, you shouldn't be allowed to vote. So yeah, maybe I'm a little extreme in some of those cases, but a free-for-all, anybody, especially people who have interests who are antithetical to any kind of nationalist pride or the longevity of our nation, I don't feel very sympathetic to them, and I don't think they should be able to vote.
And I think before I go to you, Philosopher Cat and Kirsten, I mean, as far as a household vote, my husband and I think the same politically. Why would you want to be with a guy that you fight over politics with? I mean, it's no problem for us, like one household vote. It's a no-brainer, of course. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Talk about being divided if, you know, letting women and men vote separately. I think back then it was a way to create some kind of unity within society and the household. But Philosopher Cat, let's go to you next.
I actually agree mostly with what Ayla has said. I don't know about a household vote, because then I think you're weighting it disproportionately for people who have no children versus people who might have 10 children. But I do agree with this idea that you need to have skin in the game, whether it's owning property, having children, not being a net loss on society, or I would even extend that to anybody who's eligible for the draft. Because I think if you're eligible to be drafted into a war, you should have a vote on whether or not you go to war. But on the whole, I actually don't like voting at all. I'm definitely not in favor of democracy. So yeah. I'd be totally okay with nobody having a vote. Or at least like not stupid people. Like, can we put an IQ cutoff? Like,
yeah, exactly.
115.
I have no problem with like an education test, a bar. There should be a bar there.
And no offense to Kirsten, because you're still a teenager, but I mean, seriously, 18? What do you know at 18? And you're voting on the future of the country. You're a child, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm only a teenager for like a month more. But the funny thing is that I really like that you mentioned, Lana mentioned you and your husband. I've always thought that was so weird when I met people who, like, oh, we've been married for so many years, but we have nothing in common. Like,
yeah, it's absurd.
Morally, those mixed faith couples, too, I like totally don't get that.
Like the Jew and the Muslim. Yeah.
Sorry, it blows my blood. But the thing is that. I don't know. I'm also in agreement with Philosocat. I'm not a big fan of democracy, which is something that people don't like to hear. But the reason is because that I feel weird that somebody like me has the same power as somebody who's an elder, in a sense, like an old person who's like lived for a very long time.
Yeah, democracy is a failure. Mud democracy, and we're going to foreign countries and bombing them to bring them freedom and democracy. You know, this is ridiculous. And they say that nationalism is pro-war. That's a bunch of bull. Globalists are the ones who are invading other countries and destroying and toppling governments. It's not people like us. We're actually the true anti-war people, really. And that should be added here. Well, exactly. Ladies, I really want to thank you. This has been really insightful. I think it's a good summary of kind of some of our views from a female perspective, because we have to combat a lot of this propaganda that's working against us. Because let's face it, there's millions, billions of dollars right now working against people with our views. I mean, there's government groups now that are watching what we're doing and studying and sending in moles and censoring. I mean, this is serious what we're involved in, you know, and this could get dangerous. So I know it takes you're true bold women. The feminists always say, you're so brave and you're so bold. No, it's actually women like you that are truly brave and bold. So I want to thank you so much for coming on my show today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Before I let you go, I want to give a special thanks to our members, many who still sustained their membership after the hack, even though our members' website was wiped out. If it weren't for you and people who donated, we would have gone under. And that's exactly what our enemies wanted. Well, the good news is we are just days away from launching the new members' website. We'll be starting a Weekend Warrior Live again just for members and adding in some other special exclusive content just for members. You've all been so supportive, but I'm going to be honest, we really do still need your support. So if you can, please send a donation to paypal.me/redice. And of course, connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and always check redice.tv for the latest, just in case our content is censored from the websites you normally find us on. Love you guys. Thanks for all your support. See you on the next one.